This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Most parents know the sinking feeling of utter incomprehension that can strike when they talk to their teenagers. Whether it's grades, college, cars, dates, parties, chores, money, or media, mom or dad says one thing, kids hear another. A comment an adult regards as innocuous is taken as stinging criticism and prompts weeks of shrugs and eye rolls. Lots of adult experts have written books on how to talk to your kids. We'll hear from a couple of them later. But now two 17-year-old New Yorkers have tried their hand to bridge the divide from the other side of the generation gap. Later on in the program, Bob Dylan and the Summer of 65. Greil Marcus joins us to talk about his new book, Like a Rolling Stone. But first, how to talk and listen to teens. If you're a parent or a teen, call and tell us what works, what doesn't, and what some of the obstacles are. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel are seniors at Fieldston High School in New York City and authors of Breaking the Code, Two Teens Reveal the Secrets to Better Parent-Child Communication. And they join us from NPR's New York Bureau. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Three pages into your book, you say to parents, basically, you can't win. Who's going to read the rest of the book?
I think that's where you're going to start reading.
And which one are you? I'm sorry.
Oh, this is Hillary.
Hello, Hillary.
You can't win, but there are things you can do to make it a lot better around the house. Some people are screaming and fighting with their kids all the time, and it certainly doesn't have to be that way. So there's a lot you can do.
Also, I mean, teens fight with their parents, but just because they're fighting doesn't mean you can't prevent damage from being done.
Well, what do you mean by damage?
Well, I mean, every parent wonders why they're getting the silent treatment when they thought a conversation was going well. We can tell you why they're giving you the silent treatment. Even if you didn't win the fight because your child stormed off and said, I hate you, you can win, you know, in the long run.
Ah, so you can leave little landmines, time bombs in there that will go off later and they'll have some comprehension of what you were actually trying to get across?
We hope so.
As an overall philosophy, what do you think a parent's guiding principles ought to be when they try to communicate with their teenagers?
I think the first thing is to understand that your teenager isn't always going to be rational, but that there are things you can do to make them understand what you have to say. And the main thing is to recognize that their reality, although you know it might not be rational, is still their reality. So you have to be open to that and listen to them when they speak. You know, let's say I do poorly on a test and you know that it's not that big a deal. And next week I'll take another test and it can all be erased. For me at that moment, it seems like the end of the world. And for a parent to just embrace the reality of their teen is really helpful to the teenager.
So providing a little adult perspective, Lara?
Well, we think that providing a perspective is a good thing, but it's more how you approach that perspective that's important. You don't want to say to your teen, you know, I'm older than you, I know better. You want to say to them, you know, listen, I've had some experience and I don't want you necessarily to go through those things, so hear me out for a little bit. Just humor me as your parent.
But you draw some examples of, you know, when parents say one thing, kids hear another. And one of the things parents tend to say is, back in my day, and you conclude that what that means, what a teenager hears is, well, back in the Jurassic era.
Exactly. I mean, things have changed. I mean, of course, there are still issues like curfew and drunk driving, but something like academic pressure is more real than ever. Every child, you know, picks up the New York Times and they hear something about, like, you know, how to become the cookie cutter kid. If you join the soccer team, you can get into the Ivy League. So, you know, when they go home, they want to have a release of that pressure. They want to be at home and hanging out, and for them to come home and have a parent say to them, you know, I read this article in the New York Times, you need to read it too, is unhelpful.
Yeah. Hillary, remind us, those of us whose teen years are a dim memory, when you say teenagers are not always rational, give me a for instance.
Let's see. I guess, okay, so every teenager wants to stay out as late as they possibly can get you to allow. So even though we know it's totally irrational to be on the streets of New York City until 4 in the morning, we're still going to ask you for the latest possible curfew. And even when you say, you know, 12:30 or 1, which might sound late to a lot of your listeners, we're still going to ask, oh, please, 1:30, 2. And we know it's irrational, but we're going to ask you anyway. And we're just going to keep asking. And when you say no, we'll probably cry or I might cry or run out of the room and say, you're so irrational, I hate you, even though we know that 2:30 is way too late to be out.
Mm-hmm. And the argument about, gee, all of my friends are going to, they're all staying out late. That's the familiar one. And the adult usually replies, well, if all your friends jumped off a bridge...
Which is the most irritating thing you can possibly say, so everyone remember that.
Because we know we wouldn't jump off a bridge if our friends were. We just want to stay out later.
Our number, if you would like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking with Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel of the Fieldston School and authors of Breaking the Code, Two Teens Reveal the Secrets to Better Parent-Child Communication. And let's get a caller on the line. Larry's with us. Larry's calling from Panama City, Florida.
Good morning.
Morning. Actually, it's the afternoon here, Larry. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. My point is that it's best when you're trying to make a point to a child to keep it simple. Don't ramble. If you can condense your statement down to one sentence, it sticks much better before their eyes glaze over after 10 minutes of rambling.
Mm-hmm. And for instance?
Anything at all, from cleaning up your room to grades in school. If you can keep it simple, one sentence will stick in their mind. If you talk to them for 10 minutes, after the first two, they're gone.
Lara Fox, is that a good idea?
I mean, basically, every parent should pick and choose their battles also. You know, if you're agitated about something and you want to talk to them and you go in screaming to them for 20 minutes about why they're wrong, they're just going to roll their eyes every time you raise your voice at them. So you really want to choose, the most important things that are, life-altering, smoking versus cleaning the room. So once you choose those issues, you should approach them with one or two points exactly the way Larry just said.
Hmm. What about threats? Do threats work?
Although they may work in the short term, they won't work in the long term, because every teenager that feels like they're being bribed, doesn't feel like they're being respected, and that hurts a lot more. Even if you say, you can't go out until your room's clean, every kid's just going to throw all their stuff in the closet so you can't see it and go out.
Well, every once in a while, a parent will open that door to the closet.
Yes,
I think Fibber McGee
true.
Was the first of them, a name you won't remember. Larry, thanks very much for calling. Let's go now to Sarah. Sarah's calling from Solon, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
I'm a fencing coach here in Greater Cleveland, in Lakewood, Ohio, as a matter of fact, and I deal with a lot of students ages 7 through adult, majority of my kids being teens.
Mm-hmm.
I find two basic ways to handle them. It also helps that I can get rid of them after a few hours. But first off, I treat them as my peers. I may be their senior peer, but I'm still their peer. So they know that if they've got a legitimate point, I'm going to give in to them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Two, I also, when they've got an argument or so on, I'll always give validity to their argument. However, even within the situation, explain that there are other issues that they're not seeing. Yes, they have a legitimate point, but these other issues have greater weight. So bring in the logic factor to them. I also wait for them to let me know when they're ready to talk to me. So I kind of empower them so that I can be empowered.
Well, Sarah, that seems like good advice, but Lara, the situation is different. I mean, the relationship with a coach, is that the same as with a parent?
No,
definitely.
I'm sorry, Sarah, can you hold on a second? We're going to go to Lara.
I think the relationship's definitely different, and sometimes you can't wait for a teen to approach you because they're not going to. And also, it's a nice thing to go up to your kid and say, what's going on here, and talk to them casually about something, because if you don't go to them, they think you don't care, and it's very important that your teen knows that you're always there to listen and talk.
Mm-hmm. And Sarah, the other difference is, teens take fencing voluntarily.
That too, but also the relation of a coach with a student potentially can be, at times, more intensive, more constructive, and destructive than a parent.
That's definitely true.
A coach can both build a student up as well as knock them down in one sentence.
Mm-hmm. I think that everybody recognizes that, but they're not going to be waiting there on the doorstep when the kid is 20 minutes late to getting home.
That's true. However, there are frequently times that I can see that there's an issue that a child doesn't want to talk, a teen doesn't want to talk to their parents about. I went through the whole conversation of birds and bees with a senior who's going to be going off to college in the fall, and she talked to me about it. because she didn't feel comfortable talking to mom about sex. You know, and I said, well, when was the last time you had the conversation of how babies were made? She said, oh, Girl Scouts in fifth grade, but mom was there, so I couldn't ask the question.
What college did she get into?
Case Western Reserve University.
Well, thank you, Sarah. We appreciate that that review. Let me ask you about this email we got. This from Nick Bogdan in Duluth. I just had a baby. One of the things I want to do to build a communication guideline from an early age. What would you have wanted your parents to do to build that bridge with you? Sports? Outdoors? What?
Well, we think that, you know, it's important to take your child out to lunch or dinner at least once or twice a week. I know that there are working parents, but, you know, being there so your child knows you are always there to talk. It's very important. And, you know, ways to do that, of course, you give your child, once they've, you know, exited the children years, their privacy, you know, in all sorts of sectors. Like, you don't say to your child, you know, we've got dinner with, you know, X, Y, and Z next week. Write that down. You say, you know, I know you have a schedule of your own now, but, you know, can you make time for this on this day? You want to respect their personal boundaries.
And respect their commitments, their lives, their obligations.
Exactly.
Okay.
Another.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, just another to start communication from an early age, I guess. You mentioned a few things you can do with your child, and I would say the main thing is to make sure you're doing something your child doesn't want to do. Like, I never wanted to play Little League or do sports, and my parents never made me, and I'm thankful for that I wasn't pushed into something and felt forced and hated it for that. And I don't feel any sort of resentment in that sense.
We're talking with two teenagers, Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel, about parents getting through to teens. We've been obviously listening to the teen side of this equation. Coming up next, we'll be joined by two parenting experts who are a little bit older. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the parent-teen divide and how communications might be established across it. How do you relate to the teenagers in your life? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN, at npr.org. We're speaking with two 17-year-olds who've written a book called Breaking the Code. Two teens reveal the secrets to better parent-child communication. But we're going to pause for just a moment. Elaine Mazelish and Adele Faber are best-selling and award-winning authors of books about child-parent relationships. Their next book, How to Talk So Teens Will Listen and So Teens and Listen So Teens Will Talk, is due out from Harper Resource Publishers in the fall. And they are also with us at NPR's Bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, and congratulations on your new baby.
I'm not having a new baby, but anyway, that's all right. Or if it is, my wife is very surprised. Anyway.
Wow.
I know you're currently writing your own guide to teen parents, to parenting teens, rather. What's your general reaction to the advice that you've been listening from Lara and Hillary?
Oh, it makes such sense. Everything is wonderful, and the focus on the specifics of communication is everything. For example, they talked about not threatening kids, and our upcoming book is just filled with illustrations of the kind of talk that either stops communication in its tracks or gets it to move on. And for example, we have this little role play here. Elaine, have you got it? No, you haven't got it. I'm doing it myself. All right. You know, parent says to the kid, you are not wearing that torn shirt to the restaurant. And the kid says, why not? It's just a little rip. You know, he's got his shirt totally torn. And she says, it looks like a rag. You know, if you don't change into something decent, you can just stay home. And what does the kid say? Surprise, surprise. What does he say, Neil? I'll just stay home. Exactly. And that is how teenagers react to threats, with defiance or more defiance.
Well, how about that go a little bit better?
And if you can simply offer them a little choice. Chris, we're going to a restaurant where people dress up a little. And he says, so? And you can say so. You can wear any shirt that isn't torn or, I don't know, maybe put a jacket over the one you're wearing now. I'm not changing. Where's my jacket? And at the bottom of the page, we have, you know, we have a better chance of gaining their cooperation if we can possibly substitute a choice that meets our needs and theirs.
Well, let's bring Lara and Hillary back into the conversation. Lara, and you guys draw very similar kinds of scenarios throughout your book, positing situations where something that might happen frequently in a teenager's conflict with their parents, something happens, and how not to do it and how to do it a little bit better.
Exactly. I think the trick is that every teenager isn't rational and they're not aware of it, like Hillary said. And the knowledge that this book can provide for the parent is, you know, they can get their point across and achieve what they want to do if they know where the teenager is coming from, and then they can work around those boundaries.
Yes, the awareness of the teenager and the struggles. And I think probably the key for both is mutual respect. You had written something about parents knocking before they go into a teenager's room. And I think that's part of a household theme, is that in our home, when the doors are closed, whether it's mine and Dad's or yours, that we knock and we say, is it okay to come in? So we're building a whole environment of mutual respect and modeling for our teenagers how we want to be spoken to.
Hillary, exactly. A lot of the situations you describe, one of the key points is around the issue of privacy. Almost or semi-adults living in a house with other adults who are responsible for them, and the friction is inevitable.
Exactly. I think the point is what you just said about us being semi-adults. You know, we live under your roofs, but we still have things that we deserve, you know, to be our own, our backpacks, our bedrooms, as Lara said before, our schedules, and it's hard to define what exactly is our own. So I think that's where a lot of the communication barriers break down, when parents don't realize that something we have is very personal to us and they just sort of intrude upon it.
Mm-hmm. Adele, I was wondering, you guys do a lot of role playing. Is it similar to what that scene that you were playing out before?
When you is what similar?
The role playing you do in workshops for parents?
Yeah, we illustrate everything. That's what our books are all about.
The illustrations are either with audios or videos or Faber and Maislisch. But you know, I would just like to give one skill, and check this out with both of you. The feelings, young people and their feelings, and they come to their parents and feelings are denied. If we were going to teach one skill to parents, what would be the most important? And we say it is acknowledging rather than denying feelings. A mother comes to a daughter and says, Abby, honey, why are you crying?
Well, Scott dumped me.
Oh, honey, he what?
Yes.
Well, good riddance. I never liked him.
Well, I did.
Honey, forget about him. You'll have plenty of other boyfriends.
That's what you think.
So, I mean, isn't this normal, natural? Mom wants to make Abby feel better. But it's interesting, by dismissing her daughter's distress, she adds to it. So what can you do instead? And this is the toughest thing for parents to do. They need to be able to identify the thoughts and feelings, give it a name, even though it's painful, because that's where health lies. And here's the more positive example. Abby, something is making you unhappy.
God dumped me.
Oh, no wonder you're so upset.
I should have seen it coming. He was always flirting with other girls.
Oh, no, that could hurt.
It did, but I kept telling myself that I was the one he really liked.
You wanted so much to believe it.
Yeah, but it wasn't true. Anyway, he's not the kind of person I want for a boyfriend now.
Isn't that interesting? Mom can't take away all of Abby's pain, but just by putting her thoughts and feelings into words, she helps her daughter actually deal with reality and gather the courage to move on.
But let me ask...
I'm interested how that Well, did that resonate with you?
I mean, we think that that's great. I think it's important to let your teen talk and to guide them and just let them vent to you sometimes, because a lot of the time the teen really doesn't need you to respond. They just need someone to listen. And it's a lot easier to blow up at a parent and not at a friend. You know, you can't just, you won't have any friends if you talk to your friends the way you do your parents.
Has consequences,
exactly.
Yes.
So exactly. You rely on your parents. So parents also shouldn't take it personally that they're blowing up sometimes, because teens sometimes just need to blow up.
And one of the skills we teach is just listen to them, and sometimes just the littlest response, yeah, I see. I mean, that's all they need. It's like, don't get in their way with any advice or criticism. We have another little set of cartoons here where the kid comes home and he says, oh no, my Shakespeare report is due tomorrow. And mom says, don't tell me you still haven't finished it. I thought I had till Friday. That's what happens when you don't plan ahead. But no buts about it. Just sit down and do it now. Oh, get off my back. You watch your mouth.
Yeah, Mom has perfectly good intentions. I mean, she wants her son to do well in school. But by criticizing his behavior, dismissing his worry, and telling him what to do, she makes it harder for him to tell himself what to do. And by and large, that's very much a theme in our book, how to help young people, teenagers, tell themselves what to do, not us telling them. So many questions that we can decide, well, what do you think about that? So how do you feel? How would you work it out?
I'm interested
in having feedback from you.
Elaine Mazelish and Adele Faber, we look forward to your book when it's published. It sounds very promising.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it will be published in August.
The book is How to Talk So Teens Will Listen and Listen So Teens Will Talk, due out from Harper Resource Publishers. And Elaine Mazelish and Adele Faber joined us from NPR's Bureau in New York. And we continue our conversation with Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel, also at the Bureau in New York. Let's get another caller on the line. And John. John's calling from Haley, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, hey, John. I had a real simple experience to relate last night as I was listening to the conversation. My, I pour the bath and nestle in with my book, and I'm in the middle of a great book, and my son comes in and sits down and wants to talk. I got to put my book down. And honestly, I had to kind of talk myself into that. And then later on, I'm getting ready for bed, and my wife's out. It's hockey night, so I'm tired. The kids are, for the most part, down, and I say goodnight to my older daughter, and I see a little glimmer of a tear, and I realize, you know, my thoughts of an early bedtime are out the window. I need to ask her what's going on and talk to her. And that continues for an hour and a half, and not really saying much, just listening to her dilemmas, her social thing that's going on, and appreciating what it is. And I realized, you know, afterwards that, I want to have this relationship with my kids where we communicate, and that's what it takes, putting my agenda aside, turning off NPR.
Now, don't do that.
And listening to what they have to say. But that was my comment.
Well, it's an interesting story, John. And Lara and Hillary, it does raise the question. I mean, parents are supposed to be like John and put our own needs aside, at least for the moment. But what happens when parents turn out to be, as selfish as teenagers are sometimes?
Well, I would say you can't afford to be selfish, because the one time you do it is going to be the last time your kid's going to come to you. You know, if they see that you're not ready to put down your book or listen when there's a tear in their eye, they're not going to come into the bathroom next time, because it seems like you just don't really have the time or want to listen.
John, it's demanding, isn't it?
Well, it is demanding. And, you know, listening to that comment, I'm thinking, you know, I was the one that chose to have the kids, and I do deal with, honestly, with those selfish instincts of, oh, I'm so tired, I'd like to go to sleep, and but, you know, I'm the one that signed up for this, and, I need to do my best not to nod off when she's sharing her current dilemma in her life, and really try not to give advice, and really try not to be selfish.
And your older daughter, how old is she?
14.
So, well, not that much younger than Lara or Hillary. I was wondering how you reacted to that 2 a.m. Curfew time there in Haley, Idaho.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I remember the rule is when I was a kid is, you know, I had to let my parents know what time I was returning, and I needed to return at that time. It wasn't so much what the time was, per se. I just remember my dad wanting to know when to get worried.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John. Thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it, and good luck to you.
Okay, well, thanks. I look forward to reading the book.
We're talking with the authors of Breaking the Code, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I just wanted to follow up on that, Hillary, and say, you know, obviously, of course, parents should go out of their way and make these. Is this just a one-way street? Can't parents expect any understanding from their kids at all?
I think, yes, you can expect some understanding. I just think that for a parent, like the caller said, that it's basically you signed up for this and it's sort of your responsibility. And I'm not saying that every time your teenager wants to talk to you, like about anything, that you have to put down what you're doing. If you're working and your kid comes in and wants to tell you how, you know, the entire plot of a movie, you don't have to put down everything to hear that. But it's when they just something serious or just want to talk casually and you're not doing something that's so pressing at the moment.
Also, if you don't listen to them talk about the more casual issues when it comes time that, you know, there's something really serious going on, you don't want them to feel uncomfortable. You want them to come to you. And when they do, you know, even if it is something serious, the first thing you want to do is take a deep breath and say the issue isn't going to go away today. Let's think about this and not react irrationally really quickly and, you know, get them so worked up because you're so angry that they're going to fear talking to you about something again because you want them to talk to you.
Oh, you just take all the fun out of it. Anyway, let's get another caller on the line. This is Nancy. Nancy's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say I really like the things that you're saying in your book. I think they're very helpful. And I am actually a stepmom, and my husband and I have had several of the kids from his first marriage come to live with us. And we currently have one son living with us. And he came to us when he was in seventh grade. He's now a sophomore and was pretty much straight S and really struggling in school and feeling pretty bad about himself. And my husband's been excellent. He's really good at helping teach study skills and helping him to learn how to feel good about himself in terms of school and his academics, and also has encouraged him to go out for sports. But the concern that I had was one of the things that you said was that it probably would be not a good idea to reward kids so that they would maybe lose some self-respect when you maybe gave them a reward to keep the room clean. But we don't have to do that. Dan's really good with keeping his room clean. But but the situation I'm thinking of is like we pay for grades for an A, $20, and then we pay for doing well in track and maybe reaching a PR or a personal.
Other things seen as positive. We're just running out of time, so I wanted to get a reaction from Lara and from Hillary.
Basically, I think that, you know, setting goals for your kids are a nice thing, but you don't want to make it all about money because, you know, you don't want your kids to feel like, you know, if I do this extra thing, then I'm going to get money. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're getting all A's and they're expecting $100 from you. You know, you don't want to set it up for that boundary.
All A's. He actually does now. And he went from straight F's to all A's. So we're thrilled.
And that's great. But I think that, you know, you want to say, you know, the first two times or something like that, or change it to, you know, the reward is a free dinner because every kid's on a budget. And, you know, that's why $20 is so enticing to begin with.
Yeah.
So if you say, you know, I'll buy you a $20 meal and then they're actually going to eat with you and this is an opportunity for you to talk with them.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. The reason why we decided to go ahead and do that, but maybe this isn't a good idea, was because he wanted to get a job and we wanted him to focus, since he had struggled so much in academics in the past, we wanted him to focus on his schooling and on his athletics, which could lead to a scholarship. So we didn't want him to get a job, and he's been okay with that because he has money to buy, you know, a new game that comes out, or and he has money in his wallet.
Which reminds us that there are individual solutions for every individual. Nancy, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we'd like to thank our guests today, Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel, seniors at Fieldston High School. Appreciate your coming in today. Good luck with the book.
Thanks so much.
The book is Breaking the Code, Two Teens Reveal the Secrets to Better Parent-Child Communications, and Lara Fox and Hillary Frankel joined us from NPR's Bureau in New York. When we come back from a short break, we'll switch focus to another subject, Greil Marcus, the rock and roll writer on Bob Dylan and what he says is the greatest pop song ever written, Like a Rolling Stone. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.